It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Yeah, indeed we are, because we both can be here at the same time because turkey season's over. Good and bad, Sean.
Yeah, well, it's already, you know, my sickness, I'm already thinking about the jakes I saw this year and what I'm looking forward to next year.
Yeah, hopefully they'll make it.
Yeah, at least some of them do.
Yeah.
Some of them do. It should be good. And some grown birds that didn't get killed this year as well.
So. Yeah.
So it was you never talk about it. We just kind of keyed on the mics here. Definitely was a weird season for a lot of folks, and not just in people you and I know,
right?
But people that hunt elsewhere. I went down to Florida to kill my Osceola. They said, man, they're kind of acting funky.
Yeah.
Here, and people had success. I mean, we all killed down there, but I heard people that were hunting Rios, like Chuck Sykes,
right?
Who knows how to hunt, saying, they went a day or two without gobbling. I mean, Rios would gobble at, you know, your cell phone
anything,
going off.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, so it was weird there. Here at the, in Alabama, you had a lot of different stories. Some people just said, you were telling me stories of people that normally got their birds killed in the first week.
First week, normally. And as of about a week ago, only killed two all year, you know. And I'm telling you, he's a killer. I mean, a good friend.
But the turkey numbers, I hear from a lot of people, are okay. It was just that they weren't doing it for them.
And the weather has really, I think, had to play some part of it, because we have had a extremely warm last of March and all of April.
Yeah, but we had in that mix, and this goes back to what I've talked about in shows in the past, we had some great weather days when the birds didn't gobble.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah.
And then I had some days, like I've told y'all about, where you're like, you shouldn't be gobbling.
Yeah. Cloudy, overcast, windy, and they're gobbling their heads. I mean, it's been a strange year. Really strange year. I mean, I've had some really good hunts. I've killed two, you know. That's all I kill. And I normally get close to a limit if I don't get a limit. But it's just been a hard year. And I'm going to tell you, twice I went up to the camp that I was going to hunt a Friday, a Saturday, and a Sunday. And I ended up coming home on a Friday morning because the weather was bad.
Yeah.
You know, after I got through hunting, like last weekend, I was going to hunt all 3 days. Well, come Friday morning, hunted, beautiful morning, didn't do any good. Mm-hmm. And then Friday afternoon, a bad storm was coming through up the country. And if I went, I was going to get soaking wet. So I said, well, no. And I looked at the next day weather forecast, and it's supposed to rain all day. Saturday. I said, I'm going home. No reason to get soaking wet. I just came on home, so I didn't get to hunt. But one day last week.
Yeah, that's one of the things, too, is the number of days you go, right? I mean, because you'll get those weird weather days when they shouldn't be.
Right.
Gobbling. And I told you, so we, I would have been on my place, I would say four. I killed two. I chose not to shoot one with that. I'm hunting with a 410.
Yeah.
And had one that, you know, if I'd have had my 20, and I'm shooting TSS for people, that I'd have, unless I'd have missed him, but, I mean, it would have been a makeable shot, but you know, kind of a routine shot for me.
Sure.
Nothing's routine with gobbling turkeys, but I would have killed him, but I chose not to. He's just, and then I walked it off. I probably could have killed him, but, and then, so it goes to the one that was dead to rights. I had some close calls, but I'm talking about dead to right turkey, you know, that's just strutting and looking for a hen. And then, like I said, I don't care who the shooter is. I like to be the killer, the person that puts the thing together. And we killed one the last day on Thursday.
Yeah.
So that's four that were, you know, but I hunt hard. I mean, I hunt, you know, a good number of days. I had some, you know, like you and I talked about, I had some great hunts that didn't even involve even pulling the hammer back on the 410.
Yeah, you don't have to kill one to have a great hunt.
I still like to kill them.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend like I don't. I still like to kill them. And, but yeah, so I had some, and I've heard so many people talk about how funky the season is. And I can talk about some days when I came in here and said, what in the world went on? It was the most perfect morning ever. They didn't do it the next day, and they did it, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was in turkeys. I'm thinking about this. I killed turkey opening day, right? Yeah. Gobbling his butt off, you know, pulling him off hens. But gobbling his butt off. And then Thursday, last day of the season, bird gobbled 125 times. You know?
Yeah.
And he had another bird gobbled a few times, but he
And he was over. Answering you?
Oh.
When you was calling?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, sometimes they do that and they won't answer you. I mean, I've had that happen quite a few times this year.
Oh, yeah. The turkey gobble at everything, including our calls.
Yeah.
So.
Including your calls, you know, yeah.
It was a good season, but I can see and I hear, you know, different places have an issue. But I'd just like to point out that, you know, we talk about the old gobbled out thing. They were blowing the leaves off the trees on the first day of season for me, and they had been doing it before.
Yeah.
And they're still blowing the leaves off the trees on May 8th.
And I guarantee you, 2 weeks from now, you'll still hear them gobbling.
And they'll be strutting in the driveway.
And you'll hear them because you live with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's – and maybe the – you know, what is normal – you know, what is normal turkey hunting weather? I mean, you talk about this weather, you know, some – I mean, what is the – you know, if we could go back and maybe we get – hey, Dr. Bill, if you're listening, pull out a chart.
When I say bad weather, I'm talking about for storms. Me hunting.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like hunting when it's 85 degrees, sweating. I mean, it's not – the turkey won't do anything. It's me. Mm-hmm. I don't like hunting in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, turkeys are still turkeying.
That's right.
Whether it's storming or not.
That's right.
And I think what feels good about it is what I saw and what I've heard from other people. You and I really didn't get in a big Jake conversation for you. I feel good about, and I'm always looking at next year.
Sure.
You know, and I felt good about, you know, the hatch. And if we have a good hatch this year, I mean, weather-wise, I mean, if we could, you know, if I can – and get those poults out of the eggs.
Yeah,
I feel good about brooding habitat I have, and I feel like, you know, I can pull off another good year.
Yeah,
but that's site specific. It just, you know,
that's right. I watched a movie last night that you would love, and any turkey.
Is it one we can talk about on there?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. We talk about it. Me and Sarah, my wife, and Dylan watched this movie last night. And a buddy of mine, Jansen Graham, told me about the movie, and it's on YouTube.
Okay.
It's My Life as a Turkey. My Life as a Turkey. Go to YouTube and look it up.
This is not the Joe Hutto story, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so I've read the book Illumination in the Flatwoods. I have a whole row of my library.
It's a book, but it's a movie of him with the turkeys.
Yeah, this guy Joe Hutto from over in the Florida Panhandle.
Yes.
You can learn more about... He has these turkey poults imprint on him, and he becomes their
mother,
and he just walks with them in the woods. And out of, you know, my two favorites, you want to talk about learning about a turkey's full life cycle, Joe Hutto, learn about killing turkeys and being abused, is Colonel Tom Kelly. I mean, those books, I have a row in my bookshelf that's, you know, all Tom Kelly books and Illumination in the Flatwoods.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't know. Now, my buddy told me that I would love it and my wife would love it, you know.
Yeah, because it's not like a turkey killing thing.
No, it's not. And actually, my wife liked it so much, she told her sister, which is 88, I think, to look it up and watch it, that it was so good that she really enjoyed watching it. So
you learned a lot.
My Life as a Turkey. Okay. Joe Hutto?
Yeah, Joe Hutto, H-U-T-T-O. Yeah. And I don't know if I've seen – why in my brain I think I've seen the movie at one point. But the book, yeah. So the movie, they go to YouTube, My Life as a Turkey.
Yeah.
And it's a hell of a read, y'all, turkey fans. And just people like the outdoors, Illumination in the Flatwoods. And he's talking about the Flatwoods over in Florida where he was. It's a great story. From the way the when they interact with the rattlesnake, what they do, when the Jakes, you know, start get a little testosterone and how they treat him, and I mean, it's like you learn
and
a lot
after a year and a half. What the gobbler does, with him,
yeah.
I mean, it's very. I don't want to spoil the story for people, but. My Life as a Turkey. You got to watch it YouTube. Go pull it up.
Maybe we can link it up on our Facebook page, too, and y'all can click through.
That'd be good.
And we'll have it up there as well.
Yeah.
Let's see.
But I had a buddy kill one Thursday morning, too. I'll tell you about his story a little bit. Pretty interesting. I'll tell you my story about my nephew. We didn't get a chance to last week.
Yeah,
and
we
both
get
of them
story.
A little similar. Now, my buddy that killed one Thursday morning, he hadn't killed one all year, and he is a great turkey hunter. I'm telling you, he is really good. I've hunted with him quite a bit, and he's better than I am. He's really good.
That's pretty good.
No,
I'm
just average. Yeah, right. Anyway, he's good. He ain't killed one all year. Hunting a new property, and that's mm-hmm. another thing. He's, 5,000 acres, but it's a new property, and he don't know how to get around on them and all. Anyway, he killed one Thursday morning. And what he did, he got on the turkey. He went and sat up, and he was going to hunt a road, intersection of a road, because they walk the roads all the time up there where he hunts. Anyway, and he said he heard one gobble, and he said, I know where that turkey's at. I've hunted that turkey before. I'm going to get right on him. So he did. He got right up on him. He said within 100 yards.
And this time of year when the leaves are all out, you can do that.
You can do that. Yeah. That's right. So he got within, he said 75 yards, maybe 100 yards or so. And he got there, and turkey's still in the tree. And when the turkey flew down, he's gobbling. And he just clucked and yelped one time, and he shut up.
Mm-hmm.
He never said another word. Turkey still gobbling and doing his thing, and he kind of went off a little ways, and he didn't say anything else to him. About an hour and a half later, here he comes. He could see him. He's in a kind of a pretty little flat. He could see him out there 100 yards or so, and here he comes. He's strutting and drumming and not gobbling, but strutting and drumming, and come right up, right where he was at, killed him.
But listen, the second you yelp, I'm not telling turkey hunters anything they don't know, but for those of y'all that don't, he knows what tree you're – not what block of woods, what
he
tree.
He knows the tree you're on. That's right.
All right, coming back, I want to talk more turkey stories. Also coming back in the second half of the show, the man, Captain Bobby Abrascato, speckled trout fishing. He's so glad turkey season was in because we're not – but it's over now.
Yeah.
He's going to get us fired up about the trout. That's coming up in just a little bit right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. Actually, just a conversation we're having during the break, too, about, like, talking about your buddy who's got a new piece of property and trying to figure out where to go, where to get on them. It is, it's something that, it's the way, and you and I both, when I said it, you nodded your head. Have y'all ever done this? You shot a buck, and you blood trailed the buck, and he shows you a part of your property you never have seen, or you didn't see in the same way. You get in there and you go, now I see why they, because he was going back
line
there.
Or a scrape line. Or
you see something, you're like, how did I miss this? But you bud trailing that deer, and he shows you the place where he's going back to sanctuary, right? And then you find him, and then you learn a little something about your land. And I've had that help. I hunted public for a long time, and a big piece of public land right here near us.
Okay, that's right.
We'll just put it that way. No surprise. It's got rivers around it.
Yeah.
But I would, I was hunting with my ears back then because you didn't know somebody was on the bird the day before. You had no, you had to go and just go to gobbling birds. And when you'd kill one, where you killed that bird, and then to go where that bird was gobbling from, I'd learn stuff. It made me better than I was the day before.
Yeah.
Because even though I killed that bird, there's going to be another bird in that same area doing something later that season or for sure the next season. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like that turkey, two mm-hmm. turkeys I killed them out of the same bottom. When I got down in that bottom, I know why these turkeys in here. One thing, the bull gnats, it's shaded, real shady in there, so there wasn't any gnats or anything bothering them, and it was all open. They could see a long way, so they get down there and strut and drum and gobble and all that, and they can see all the way around. So I said, now I know why he's there.
And the worst thing is where you had one place at that management area, the big one, logged at some point, or trees were down, but there was like a briar thicket, but you got beyond, you're like, why is there a turkey? But you didn't have to get like 50 yards beyond that, and then it was open bottom again.
Yeah.
But you're like, why are that? You're going through this hell getting there.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they liked it because it made it hard to get into them, but then they had a big open, it was long as slough in there, and they're good to go.
And one thing about hunting a river bottom like that is Mother Nature tells them that, the water's going to come up mm-hmm. and the hens are going to get up on the hills most of the time to nest. Mm-hmm. They don't nest down in that river bottom. So it's good maybe the first part of the season, but after that, a lot of times those hens are going up in the hills to nest.
And I guess, not telling anything new here, but I would transition hunting that piece of public. to the areas where I'd still be in the swamp, but I'd be
at the edge.
At the edge of where it started kicking up.
That's
all right, we got a turkey story about your nephew, my buddy.
Yeah, you know, and it's all about, it may never work again on another turkey. Who knows? It's kind of like my buddy Dave Lawbert killed that one Thursday. You know, he yipped one time and shut up and, you know, just waited. Most people can't stand it. You got to yip again, you know. You just got to hear him gobble again or whatever. Hear him answer you. But he didn't. And after an hour and a half or so, the turkey came up and killed him. Well, my nephew basically did the same thing. He said that he heard one gobble just way off. You know, couldn't even tell, kind of like I did on one of my turkeys, that you could hear him so far off, you just can't even tell what direction. Yeah, what direction did he? Right, left, straight ahead? You just can't tell. And then, you know, he yipped real loud. And a few minutes later, you know, we heard him just a little bit closer and still couldn't hardly tell where he was at. And then waited a few minutes and yipped again and he gobbled and he got a little closer. And after he got, you know, within hearing distance where he could say, okay, he did answer me, he said he shut up. Never said another word for an hour and 15 minutes.
And how far off was that when he?
He said it was so far off he couldn't hear. He couldn't tell where. Wasn't sure it wasn't a woodpecker.
Right.
You know how that is. You think, well, is that a turkey or a woodpecker I just heard?
Mm-hmm.
And then couldn't tell what direction he was. And then, you know, finally, after he knew that he answered him, he shut up. In an hour and 15 minutes, that turkey came right to him and he killed him. You know? So, I mean, like my buddy David Lawler. He yep one time and shut up, and that turkey that I killed, one of them, I didn't say anything to him and killed him.
That was the most amazing
hunt.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like my nephew Philip, he finally, after the turkey answered him, he just shut up. He was still way away from him, and turkey came in and killed him. So, I mean, you know, there's some lessons in that.
It is. I would an individual given day, I don't know what the heck they're thinking. Because to say, well, they always do this, they don't always do anything.
They don't.
But, you know, later on in the season, once the hens are gone, it's a lot better chance of having one cross big distances. But even in early season, it's the old two-year-old sneak in.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're listening to that bird that's at a big distance. Say you sat and you said, why am I sitting down here? Because there's a chance there's a turkey between you and that goblin bird, and he's not gobbling because he's had his butt whipped.
Yeah.
But he's going to show up, you're going to hear, pretty soon, even though he wasn't gobbling. So, you know, you have the chance of that bird crossing big distances coming to you, and also in between, you have the old sneak-in boy.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that happen to me twice this year, sneak up on you. And the biggest turkey that I've ever killed, I had that happen with me. I mean, I killed one that had five beards, a 12, a 9, a 8, a 7, and a 6-inch beard, and had an inch and a half spurs. And we were up next to, story before, I know, but we was up on next to Boykin Management Area, and I was with Todd Kershaw, you know, my buddy Todd, and there was one out in the clear cut, and I put him up next to the clear cut, and I was on a little creek bank. And I was calling, and that turkey was gobbling, and he was coming, and Todd already got his gun up, and he's, you know, the turkey's just almost on him, and he's getting ready to shoot here in a few minutes. And I look across the creek, and here's this turkey about 20 yards from me staring at me. And I'm not prepared.
Right.
I wasn't.
You're just a caller.
I'm just a caller. I wasn't thinking about shooting, and I didn't know but you shoot when the opportunity arrives.
That is correct.
So I shot him. I had no idea what I shot. Mm-hmm. No idea. And it happened
to gobbler, that was it.
It was the biggest gobbler I've ever killed in my life.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And he came in quiet.
He never said a word. Never said a word. The one out in a clear cut that was coming to Todd, he was just hammering it and getting closer every minute. I mean, it was like Todd was
big
getting,
boy slipped in.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Of course, Todd wasn't happy.
No. But listen, you have to do it.
You got to kill when your opportunity arises, period.
Well, you know, my long-running joke about one of my good friends and I, we said, listen, if we would have made a turkey hunting show, we talked about this back in the day, it would have been probably not the most popular on TV because we grew up hunting tough turkeys in Alabama.
Yep.
Because, you know, like a TV show, they'll have it strutting and back and forth and gobbling and this and that and, you know, all this camera footage.
Yep.
You grow up hunting public land and tough private land, it'd be like, there's a white head. Boom.
Yeah.
Show's over for this week.
Yeah. Of course, I've been with Eddie Salter several times, I guess, filming. And, you know, it's an art to that. Now, I want to tell you, it is an art to get good footage of turkeys before you kill him. Because the instinct for me is to pull the trigger just like you.
Because we're
as
from
soon
Alabama.
As you see his head, he's dead, you
yes.
know? And anyway, I admire those people, especially in Alabama, trying to get good footage. And we did. We got some good footage on a couple of turkeys that we killed. So I admire them.
I'd have a better chance of doing it these days
yeah.
than I would have when I was a younger man. We'll put it that way.
Yep.
Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Captain Bobby Abrascato joins us. Stay close. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Those of y'all that have been, they're just fishing folks that have suffered through Mike and I with this turkey season. We're going to shift gears here. And I think this man, while he doesn't turkey hunt, is a huge fan of turkey season. You know him by his other name, Captain Bobby Abrascato, joining us now on the show. Hey, Captain Bobby.
I like that. I remember we've said that before. And by the way, I'm not a turkey hunter, and I do like turkey hunting season because a lot of you turkey hunters are stuck with trout fishing, so fishermen. That's why I like turkey hunting. But I do not suffer listening to you guys talk about turkey hunting. I think it's pretty cool. I think that turkey hunt's pretty cool. If I were to hunt, that's what I would like to do. That sounds
you would.
Like a lot of fun.
It is. It is like it's the best. But yeah, now.
It's a challenge. If you like a challenge, you would love turkey hunting.
Well, it just seems like there's so much going on, and you don't, you know, with the calling and the, mm-hmm. you know, and the listening, and that just to me that sounds just kind of cool right there, being able to do it. Plus, like Mike was talking about, you can turkey hunt on end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You can turkey hunt on end of the day
all day.
I don't know anything. Yeah, all day, and I guess you could do that with deer hunting.
Yep.
But I noticed those duck hunters. When they start duck hunting up on the causeway, that's when I cross paths with them. And I'm usually when we're fishing up there, I'm usually the one launching really early, and I'm pulling into the parking lot real early, and the duck hunter trailers are already dry. So that'll tell you.
Listen, dog, we've been out there.
Been out there.
Yeah.
For a while.
If you want a good spot, we've been out there. You were well, not you, but because you go to bed on time. But people who might stay up to watch the late news, they're probably still awake when those duck hunters are getting out there.
Yeah.
Been one, but I know you love. Turkey season also because it keeps folks off the water, but it's all over, and you're now going to get another big wave of people moving in. And it's funny how it lines up with this weekend. Looking forward, this is the your favorite time of year, right? As speckled trout fishermen, this is pretty much perfect.
It is, you know, and we come up with this time of year, and it's my favorite time of year, and then we get into that fall and go like, man, this is my favorite time of year, and then I start realizing I really pretty much like it all, you know, but this is definitely special. This is, you know, I've had so many good days. My personal best trout was caught on this moon coming up, and the May moon coming up, and I've had so many people catch their best, and I've caught some of my, you know, really sure enough biggest trout on this cycle. Even though I've caught them through the year, this has been the one where it just feels like they, you know, and I, well, matter of fact, I didn't feel like I know for a fact that they do, but some of the the big females that are in there are just so loaded with roe and they're so aggressive and the water temperature, just everything really comes together for it to be good. So that in itself, I guess, probably makes it one of my favorite times of the year. How about that?
Okay. That's fair enough. Cause yeah, I've been like the fall too, but, it's probably my favorite, but this is pretty close. Let's talk about that for a second to think about. The roe weight and on a fish, how much, like, you know, I would pick a size, but what kind of percentage increase? I'm not looking like we're not Dr. Sean Powers here weighing them out, but I mean, you've handled more speckled trout than anybody around here. Does that a pound to a big
two
girl?
Pounds.
2 pounds.
Oh, yeah. You start getting a 28, 29 inch trout, you're probably talking about 2 pounds of difference in roe. They're
that's
that big.
Even, yeah.
You know, even like a 25, 27 inch fish, you're probably talking a pound plus. So you get that big bonus. And even though that fish would have had roe sacks, you know, back in March and in April, and they'll continue to have them probably through October, you'll notice that as they spawn through those, those sacks are getting thinner, you know. So it's not that it's not the same fish. You're going to catch a 28 or 29-inch fish in Fowl River in December, but it'll weigh 7.5 pounds, where you catch it, you know, in the next couple weeks or the next month, it's going to weigh 9, you know. So you get that bonus, but it's still the same fish, you know what I'm saying? It's just people, I think, like to look at not only the length, even though you hear a lot more about length nowadays, but you still, everybody goes by weight. I caught an 8-pounder, I caught a 9-pounder, you know, and but a lot of people still talk about 28-inch, you know, I caught a 28-incher, a 30-incher, and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, it definitely adds a bunch of weight to that fish this time of year.
And also, we get a better chance, I would think, of getting those big fish because they get, well, they're bigger, they're way more. They also, not, I mean, they got to eat all the time. This idea that they, I mean, they're always eating, but they seem to put themselves in places where they can more easily be caught. What's your formula on that? I mean, why do we catch more big fish this time of year?
That's a big part of the equation. Like you said, they're up there, they get, it's easier to locate them. They get up, to me, they do a lot of spawning in shallower areas, which to me makes it easier to catch because you're dealing with a narrower water column, easier to get the baits in front of them. But the other big part of the equation, and there's not one bigger than the other, what you just said, but the other part is that they're gathered in such huge spawning schools. There's a tremendous amount of competition, not only with the big females that are in the group. They're fewer in numbers, the females, but there's a bunch of males around them that are doing their thing. And when you get that much competition, that's when your odds go up of being able to catch that fish. And speckled trout, there's other species of fish that I've seen and that don't bite when they're spawning. Speckled trout are the exact opposite. When they're in a peak spawn, that's the peak feeding periods, you know. So you got a lot of stuff kind of going in your favor to catch that big fish with, like you said, the areas that they spawn in, the competition in the schools, and the fact that they just eat when they're spawning. And spawning activity occurs pretty much throughout the year on the moon. It's just that this time of year, all the stuff comes together as far as salinity and water temperatures and those sort of things to make it the peak spawning period.
So you said something about the clarity of water. What's the clarity of the water right now? I know that all that dredging going in Mobile Bay right now is causing some problems up and down the Mobile Bay. What about where you're fishing? Is it causing any problems?
No, it's not. It stays clear. I've been mainly down to the west of the Dolphin Island Bridge, down in the Sound. But you're right, between the combination of what they're doing there, and we've had quite a bit of freshwater runoff for this time of year. It's usually starting to clear up. But as you've seen, we've had these big slugs of rain, and the rivers have been up. So you've had a combination of that and the upstate runoff coming down the bay. So the bay itself has been kind of on and off. And another part of that, we were talking about catching fish on this peak period is, and I mentioned salinity, you've got to be in a higher salinity environment. They have to have 15 parts per thousand just to start spawning. And they really up like in the 20 range to give you an idea. That's probably something like what you would get like in the near Gulf, that level of salinity. So they're not going to spawn in a fresh, like the places we catch them during the fall and winter where they're not spawning, like the rivers, where you're dealing with, you know, sometimes even single-digit salinity levels, but like 10, 12 parts. They'll be in that, but they're not going to be spawning in that, you know, now. So you're going to have to find higher salinity environments, which brings me back to your question is, mainly down west of the bridge, down in the Sound and down towards the Barrier Islands, right now is where you'd want to be if you're going to be targeting those type of fish in those big spawning schools, because that's where they're going to be.
Well, on the islands, say Dolphin Island, Petty Boy Horn, and all that, this time of year, the Gulf side, is that good or does that get better later on in the summer?
It gets better later in the summer, but right now, because of the couple other things we were just talking about as far as fresh water, you mentioned the Barrier Islands, but also going back to the east to that Fort Morgan Peninsula, the Gulf side has been kind of an early deal. So yes, right now that'd be a great place to be. You know, the downside to the Gulf side is it's very weather sensitive. You got to have the right conditions to get over there and fish that, whether you're wading or in the boat. And so you got to be real particular about the day you go around there to do that that Gulf side fishing. But yes, so one word to answer your question, yes, it's good.
So what about, are you wading right now, or are you in your boat all the time? I know you love to wade fish, but
I do. Ideally, I like to wade fish, Mike, but it just depends on the crew that I have. You can't go turn, you know, people that aren't real experienced anglers loose in the water with a rod and reel and a hook and hope they can get a hook out of a fish without getting it into them, you know.
So, yeah.
And there's issues, things too, just taking a fish off and retying in case of a break off or something like that. So, you know, if I have the right anglers, I'm going to be in the water this time of year, particularly in the next week or so, because those fish. The other thing too is that we talked about shallow. It's amazing how shallow water you'll catch some of these big fish in. The biggest fish I ever caught in my life was at 9 o'clock in the morning in calf deep water. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable how shallow they'll get. And you can't catch them out of a boat. I've just never been able to catch real big fish, in real shallow water out of a boat. So I prefer to wade when I can do that. Now, like I said, getting back to that, you can't always do it. I just can't always do it because of some of the crews that I have to take, you know, so we have to fish out of the boat. So, but I can tell you right now, in the next week or so, I'm going to be wet a whole lot.
Yeah. I can understand that. Every crew, some of them don't want to get in the water. They get on a boat because they want to stay in the boat. And then when they get in the water, and like you say, you catch a fish, it's like if they haven't done it before, they don't know how to get the fish up to them, get it off without putting the rod down and sticking it in the water and getting the salt water from one end of it to the other. You know, it can cause some problem getting hooks in them.
Oh, yeah. You got to be real careful with it. And, I got to be selective because I'm not with them all the time. When we get in the water, you get kind of spread out, you know, especially when you're in the looking mode. You know, if you're going to fish right on top of each other, you might as well just stay in the boat, you know. But we get kind of spread out and, you know, everybody's kind of for themselves and kind of keeping an eye on each other. And if somebody gets on the fish, then you can tighten back up, you know.
Right.
But again, I'm just not standing there with them. Now, I'll have people that go like, look, I want to learn how to do this. You know, I really want to learn how to do this. So what I'll do is I'll walk with them. I'll just stay with them the whole time, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's more of a learning session than actually trying to target a fish, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can't catch
some of them get real excited too if they reeling in a big speckled trout and a shark eats half of it when it gets up about 5 feet from them.
And I'm like, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I'm one of them.
You're missing this part here, that people going with them to learn, you better do your exercise first, because remember, Trackstar, you know, track star Bobby Abrascato, when you wade with him, you know he was a track star.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's the same way, though, fishing deeper structure in the summer with you. You'll have people fishing at different depths until it dials in to what's happened. Somebody's on the bottom, somebody's halfway up, you know, those kind of things. You mentioned that, I mean, about wade fishing. You know, if you're by yourself, you're by yourself. But if you have a group, it is good because you're covering more water and finding where that school is, and then everybody can bunch up and then spread out again and bunch up, you know, to catch those fish.
Yep, and it definitely helps to have somebody with, you know, like you just said, cover more water, but also just like there's times when I'm throwing a top water and I'm wondering, like, I know there's fish here and I'm just not getting bit. Should I be throwing something subsurface? Whereas if you've got somebody with you, you know, and it's amazing, you can go right through some fish throwing a top water just knowing they'll bite it and go right through them and not even know they're there, you know. So that's the other thing, is having other people with you is somebody else can throw something else a little different than what you're doing too. So you're covering water and you're presenting different baits to them. So it makes it a lot easier to find the fish. You know, when you're doing a lot of these things too, Sean mentioned, you know, gas rig structure, those are things that the fish are relating to. They'll stay there. Where you start doing this kind of fishing, where you're doing these flats fishing and fishing these beaches and grass flats and shell flats, there's not a lot of feature. Tell me, there's little bars and stuff like that, but there's nothing to hold fish in one spot from one day to the next. So, you know, he mentioned covering ground. You got to really stay on the move until you find something. And it can be miles, a mile or 2 miles sometimes.
Try keeping up with
one
Bobby.
Day to the next.
Try to keep up with Bobby.
Well, I mean, they're just traveling up and down the beach in those.
But that's exactly right. Yep.
But let me throw my wrench into the works here. But there are some things, and we're getting close to the break, and we come back and visit with this. But second answer, there are some features, like you just mentioned, that if you had to say you can only fish these sections of the beach, there are some things that make one section of beach different than the other.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
There's contour.
Bars.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's contours. You know, just a totally flat thing is usually not. They're ambush feeders, and they're using those little, like you said, little contours, little bars. You know, the west end of Dolphin Island is a classic place. Well, really all of the barrier islands on the insides have those features of these bars running off the beach, and those are just prime places for them to ambush, and that's the kind of stuff I look for.
Coming right back with Captain Bobby Abrascato right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our main man, our buddy Captain Bobby Abrascato from A-Team Fishing, talking about the month of May, full moon. Man.
When is full moon?
Bobby, what is that, Sunday, Monday?
Monday
when is
night.
It?
Sunday night, yeah.
Sunday night, okay.
Monday
and,
night.
And well, I tell you what, we'll address that right here and then we'll go back to it. You've always taught me is not just the before. You said, what, 3 days before, but also 3 days after, right?
Yep, yep. It's kind of like a hill there, you know, like as far as the activity goes, 3 days before. You know, you can really kind of start to feel it 5 days on either side, but when you get outside of that 5 days, man, that's usually a good day to take a good time to take a day or two off, you know, because it really noticeably slows, you know, really after about 3 days, but by 5 days, man, you're ready. Everybody, including the fish, are ready for a day off, you know.
That's right.
So what causes the full moon? What causes the activity for the full moon?
That's a million-dollar question.
That's when they spawn.
You know, I wish I had a good answer for that. I don't know, you know.
The holding hands, holding fins under the moonlight? Come on. Come on, Mike.
For some reason, it causes them to do it. But, you know, it has. You guys know it has effects on other wildlife.
Everything. It does.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even turkeys.
I don't. You know, yep. One of the things I always talk about, maybe if I happen when I leave this place and hopefully go to the right place, I'm going to get up there and I'm going to see a lot of these speckled trout that I've met over the years up there, and they're going to be sitting around playing cards, and I'm going to go, what is the deal about the pink topwater lily?
Yeah.
They're going like, no, we just hate pink, man. That's all it is. We didn't, you know, it's going to be these answers that you never expect. What about the full moon? We just heard y'all talking about it. We figured it'd make you look good. You know, it's going to be something.
Keep you guessing on that.
It didn't really have anything to do with it, you know.
Yeah.
We just wanted to make you look good, you know.
Hey, Bobby, so in speaking of the lures, because this goes back to before we got on the 3 day thing. You know, I'm thinking about trips with Bobby. So you're wade fishing, throwing topwaters. Okay, so everybody were throwing topwaters, and then he'd have and the bite would slow down. And then for people that don't do it all the time, like Bobby, you'd think, well, the school's gone, it's over. Something like that. Let's keep moving. And that's when Bobby would have somebody throw something different. Jigs sometimes, but then he got me, gosh, I don't know, what, 20 years ago, Bobby, throwing stuff that I considered freshwater, a lipped crankbait, right? I mean,
yeah,
just
Mike,
something,
yeah,
something
you would
we
call
didn't.
It like a jerk.
Yeah.
Like a jerk bait. Yeah. Yeah.
It's something you wouldn't have thought. I mean, I guess, you know, I just never thought of it.
I mean, I would think that would work. It works on bass.
I know, but it was just, I don't know. I was just blind to it. And Bobby said, put this on with a lipped crankbait. And so then. Those fish didn't leave. They just did not want to hit a topwater. And you start putting something that, Bobby, we got baits for diving 2 feet down. I don't know how deep they were, but they get smacked.
How about that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And the other thing, on that subject, covering water, those type of baits, man, that is a water-covering bait. And it's also the reason I always like it is I call it it's one of those that I call an idiot bait because I'm an idiot like me.
That's why
he
gave it to
good,
me.
But
yeah.
You just throw it out and reel it back in. I mean, there's not a whole lot you have to do with it because the lure with the lip and the way it's, you know, balanced from the head to the tail, it wobbles through the water. So you're just throwing it out and reeling it back in. And like Sean said, they'll jerk it out of your hand.
Yeah. So what, is there a certain crankbait type that you're using or is it just
I
any?
Like that. On those, I like that. There was one that we had that Berkeley had forever. called, and I'm drawing a blank on the name.
Is
now,
it like
the other one that I'm
Tormentor or something that, like that?
Yeah,
that,
Tormentor. That's what it
yeah,
was.
We yeah, we threw that Tormentor a lot. That caught
but,
a lot of
but
fish.
But it's one, if you looked at like a, my favorite one now is the Yuzuri El Minnow.
Yuzuri what?
El Minnow?
El Minnow.
Okay.
Yeah. And but baits like that, there's a whole, I mean, there's a world of them. Mike, you got them in your tackle box. I guarantee you
I'm
catch
sure.
bass on them. But, you know, just like a broken back rebel or any of those kind of thin, you know, lipped type of, I call them a crankbait or a jerkbait or whatever you want to do. And, again, you just throw
they're
them
like
out
a Rapala,
then.
They're like
they're
a Rapala. Not a crankbait.
Not, crankbait.
Like a, not like a fat.
Fat crankbait.
But a longer,
yeah.
yes.
Right, okay, like a. Yeah, like
but it was, you know, it was just cool. It's that in between because, you know, growing up, we'd throw topwater, and when it stopped, we'd go to grubs. You know, I mean, it just and they still
which
would
work.
Catch
which work. Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
that in between thing that I hadn't. I don't know. I just had a eureka moment 20 years ago. Bobby said, "Put this on," and I was like, "Makes sense now because the grub like back then grubs, yeah, did they look like a you know a mullet, a finger mullet, kind of. Not as much as a lipped bait, though, dragging
right.
through the water, you know? So,
yeah.
And those fish, I mean, will eat anything that time of year, but they're in there because, I mean, Bobby Bright, I mean, they're pretty much in there because of finger mullet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That I think finger mullet's a little later, like where we're getting to now, and then in the early part before the finger mullet show up in droves. They're more on, I call them glass minnows, but mm-hmm. bay anchovies, they're showering on those. So those type of baits, you know, so it's not as much of a shrimp thing. Not that they won't hit a shrimp imitation, but it's more of those type of baits. And then of late, in the last 5 years or so, we've been using that slick lure, which is it functions the same way as that crankbait. It's a cover the water type of bait. But one of the things I like about it, the main thing I like about it is the fish eat it up. But the other thing is, too, talking about wade fishing, is you've got one single hook.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like
way better.
About the, yeah, so you're trying to grab a trout in the water, you know, with a face full of hooks, and, you know, and you're trying to grab them with your hand. And, you know, you can net them, too, but if you net a fish in top water, you know, you're down for 15 minutes
yes.
trying to get it untangled,
yes.
you know, so... so I try and grab the fish in the water, and this thing, this lure makes it a lot safer to do it because they're always hooked in the mouth. It's one big hook. It never comes out. See, the other thing that happens too, I know you've had this happen, but it's happened to me a bunch of times. It's just about the time you go to reach for that fish is when he shakes the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know,
while you got tension on it.
Shakes the lure, and you got load on the rod. And that thing's coming out like a missile.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, and I've been doing it for umpteen years, is even when it's still almost dark and I get a fish on the topwater when I'm waiting, I immediately put my sunglasses on as I'm reeling that fish in. And, you know, if you're really smart, you carry a pair of safety glasses with you. Because
yeah.
I've had that lure come out of the fish. And you got to think a lot of times you're not quite at eye level, but you're real close to eye level when that fish is – when you're reeling that fish in and he's up on the surface cutting up with a loaded rod with a three-quarter-ounce lure with two big treble hooks in it. And all of a sudden it shakes loose and it's coming right back at you. And I've had it hit me in the face and hit me in the hair. And, you know, it's so – anyway, as soon as I hook a fish on a topwater, even if it's almost still dark, I put my sunglasses on.
It's
you
a,
know,
it's a,
and
yeah, it's a smart move if you want to continue to have eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, but that slick lure, that's – getting back to that thing, that's like a lot more wade fishing user-friendly just from that standpoint, outside the fact now that my wade box is going to have like one or two topwaters in case I break off in about – six slick bodies with some single hooks, Mike. It's a big 4-aught swim bait hook.
Yeah,
it's one hook, you know,
yeah.
And it's a soft lure, you know. So the fish always has the lure in his mouth. So they're just so much easier to handle that way. And I feel a lot better about clients in the water trying to grab those fish. Or if you want to net them, it's not nearly a catastrophe.
Nope.
That you have with that lure, you know, it's like netting a fish with a grub in its mouth. It's real easy to get that hook, get the fish out of the net.
All right. Listen, the game clock has gone off here, so let's talk about this. Somebody wants to get a trip booked with you. I know, I mean, this is prime time, but we got a whole bunch more summer fishing ahead of us. How do they do it?
ateamfishing.com is our website. Real easy to navigate to the Contact Us tab. It's got our phone number and our emailable contact form, and we can get you fixed up.
All right, Captain Bobby, we appreciate
Thanks,
it. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mikey. Thanks, Sean.
All right, there he goes, and we're wrapping it up. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Until next week, we'll see you then.